I was packing the last of the samples from the ice shelf as the sun dipped to the lowest point it was going to get to in the summer. I realized that I needed to check my watch more often, and as if I were going to just continue to work off the sun as I was used to, I would easily be putting in 20-hour days. Upon this realization, the fatigue began to set in, and I still had a long drive back to the base camp that our expedition had set up. I looked around for James, surprised that he hadn't said anything about the time, when I realized I didn't see him around anywhere. I called out for him, figuring that the bright orange parkas we had on should easily stand out against the frozen landscape, but there was no trace of him. I figured I should get back to the Jeep to grab the flashlight if I was going to have to go out looking for a missing member of the research team, and I should also probably radio what was going on back to base. As I approached the car, I saw a patch of fluorescent orange on the other side of the Jeep. "Hey, James, are you taking a nap over there?" I walked to the opposite side of the car and screamed. James was slumped against the back tire, his stomach sliced open and viscera spilled out over his lap. I dropped the ice samples and retched at the sight. And that's when I heard the laughing. I looked over to see a dark-haired woman with silvery skin laughing hysterically a few yards away, sitting on a large rock. She was wearing a long white robe and was barefoot. How she was not freezing to death was beyond me, but I focused on the long, sharpened bone sword that she held that was dark red with blood. The woman stood up and suddenly stopped laughing. I got to my feet and I ran towards the Jeep. I pulled on the door handles, but it was locked. I realized James had the keys, and I turned to see if I could find them, and I felt something impale my side. I gasped as the woman yanked back the sword sideways, slicing me open, and I fell to my knees, clutching my stomach, trying to hold my guts in. And the woman walked closer and stared at me with unblinking red eyes and asked, "Do you want to hear a joke?" My name is Rick Kitagawa, and this is the Inner Monster Podcast. I know I keep finding monster names that are incredibly descriptive, from the Slipmouth Woman to Rawhead and Bloody Bones, but as soon as I saw this name in an encyclopedia of mythical creatures, I knew I had to do an episode on her. The Disemboweler. Yes, that is her name. That's it, as far as I can tell, is part of the Greenland Inuit mythology. And apparently, she was a cousin of the moon, but was banished from heaven for her baseline spitefulness and bloodthirsty behavior. The Disemboweler is now cursed and hangs out on Earth trying to disembowel people because, well, I guess she wants to live up to her namesake. And the best part about this myth is that if she can't physically eviscerate you, but she knows you're nearby in a building or something, and she can't get to you, she'll apparently tell you jokes until you die from laughter. And I think this is a super hilarious way for a monster to go after its victims. But, well, then again, perhaps her jokes are just side-splittingly hilarious. Ba-dum-bum. And while this may seem a little ridiculous, it's only ridiculous because of the contrasting ideas of what a monstrous being is. Because when I hear a monster, I usually think of some non-human entity, maybe with horns, scales, fangs, claws, or a combination thereof, who just goes around killing and or eating folks. But the Disemboweler breaks that stereotype by killing you by telling you jokes. And it's this stereotype-breaking behavior that makes it seem out of place. But it's this very seemingly paradoxical nature that also makes the Disemboweler remarkable, in the way that I can't stop myself from remarking about her myth. This contrast is what I kind of want to focus on today, as we often look at this contrast of stereotype versus who we are through the lens of someone being more human, more relatable, but specifically being more authentic. And authenticity is the topic I want to explore today. We hear a lot about authenticity, and I feel like it's sort of become a buzzword without any real meaning. So let's define it, at least for our shared purpose today. When someone is being authentic, I actually think often we mean that someone is being unfiltered. So when a leader talks about a struggle they're going through, or an actor talks about how they dislike a director, or when someone swears no matter the circumstance, we talk about them as being authentic. So while I appreciate this meaning, I don't think it's really helpful because being completely unfiltered is not necessarily a good thing. It can often make others feel bad, and I feel like acting completely unfiltered is often unhelpful in enrolling others in the change that you are looking to make. The other option, which is the dictionary definition, is that someone is true to their own personality, spirit, or character. And I think this definition speaks more to me when I talk about being authentic, because it implies that there is somewhat of a spectrum of authenticity, that you can be more or less true to the internal character that makes up who you are. But before I dive into the second definition a bit more, I think it's worth bringing up an important point about the first. In this case, when we talk about someone being authentic, we really are talking about them acting in a way that contrasts with how we'd expect them to act. So really, we're judging people's authenticity from a perspective of breaking expectations or of being remarkable in some way. We're not necessarily looking for authenticity, but looking for a unique voice that's interesting and memorable. And this isn't to say that your authentic voice is counter to being interesting and memorable, but as a consumer, most of us are looking for that unique voice when we say, quote unquote, authentic. And this is, interestingly enough, where I think the two definitions of authenticity begin to bleed together. If you're really looking for uniqueness, that's something that generally comes from breaking stereotypes and is often based upon people pursuing interests that are meaningful to them, as opposed to just what their larger peer group might be interested in. So really, uniqueness stems from authenticity. And authenticity, in a way, stems from who you are, which, by nature of not being a clone or a doppelganger, means that you're unique. And so it's not surprising, then, that we use these two words so interchangeably. Humans are really fascinating creatures in that while we all seek to be seen, heard, and valued for who we are, so often we try to be someone else in order to achieve that. So it makes sense that we often need to try and be more authentic to let the uniqueness that is your own voice out into the world. And I've also gotten the feedback that I'm very authentic, hopefully in the second definition of the word, but I interpret it to mean that I'm not afraid to say things that are strange or weird or potentially polarizing in nature. I mean, frankly, if you're listening to this podcast, you know how I get, so this isn't surprising to you, but I want to dig into the fear a lot of people face about being more themselves in a very public way. I would assert that most people are memorable and interesting, but we're so good at latching onto expectations that we often find ourselves molding ourselves into easily recognizable stereotypes, so we're much less ourselves. I also own that I do this as well. I definitely dress one way when I'm at a convention selling art, and another way when I'm running a training program for a bunch of directors at a billion-dollar corporation. That said, I try to not carry myself too differently in either situation. But like any other human, I understand that the way we dress, behave, speak, and carry ourselves all affect our credibility. And as long as I'm not divergent from who I am inside, I am going to shift how I show up within the range of who I know myself to be. And I think this gets to why so many people get tripped up about being authentic. I think a lot of us feel like we have one specific way that we need to speak, act, dress, eat, etc. But the truth is that most of us have a range in which we occupy. When I don't have any place to be, I'm often unshowered, unshaven, with unkempt hair, and I walk around my house in my underwear. When I have, say, a wedding to be at, I get out the suit and ties, dress shoes, make sure I'm all spiffy. I often walk around singing songs with made-up lyrics and nonsense words when I'm at home, and I've also polished and honed practiced speeches for speech competitions. I have one detailed tattoo of a Medusa-like woman with octopus tentacles, and I have another tattoo of cute, stylized animals. On this podcast, I talk about monsters and demons and things like cultural humility and dismantling systemic oppression. All in all, I have a range that is contextual, and I bet that all of you do as well. And that's awesome because that range is what makes us who we are. So, really, all I might be doing differently is that I prefer to showcase as broad a range as possible as often as I can, rather than stick to a more narrow range that might be more in line with what people expect from me. And I get that pushing on the edges of the boxes that society casts can be scary, because there are definitely some terrifying consequences. Part of what helps me push against the edges is that I am very fortunate to be able to work with people who value edge pushing, and I'm also in a fairly liberal city in a liberal state. It would take a lot more courage for me to shout about tearing down systemic racism if I was in a town of 200 people in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains, and it's much less difficult to advocate for trans lives here in Los Angeles than it is to do so in the Bible Belt. So first off, before we go further, please be well aware of the risks that you might be taking by suddenly slamming into the walls of the box that you're in. That said, evaluating what the risks actually are to bring more of yourself is a great first step if you're looking to embrace more of your unique, individual, authentic voice. And there are many occasions when your life isn't literally on the line to push against expectations and norms, but the consequence is usually rejection. And this is painful in itself because no one enjoys rejection. And if we're not being ourselves and we get rejected, we can use that distance from our authentic self in order to make ourselves feel better. But I assert that it is crucial for us to understand that while we want to be seen and accepted by certain people, we should actively be seeking to be rejected from people who are not for us. If you're a racist, I don't really want to be friends with you. If you hate gay people, if you think women are inherently less than men, I don't want to be friends with you. And I actively talk about identity politics in order to get these people to not want to be around me. And I mentioned the idea of polarization earlier, and I talked about exclusion as a tool in the Minotaur episode. But basically, we should be embracing the idea of pushing away people who are not for us in order to attract people who are. By making assertions and embracing more of our range as a way of life, we do start to turn some people away from us and our work. But we also start to attract the right people for us. By embracing more of the range that you bring to the world and less of what you think the world expects of you, you basically create a filter to weed out the people who are just not for you. And I think it's interesting to think that we often want to be liked and accepted by terrible people just because they're popular or powerful, and we never stop and ask ourselves why we would even want to be friends with terrible people in the first place. What good does being friends with a person if they don't treat people well, right? I think it's better to just let all the bullies and jackasses create their own tribe of poop and let all of the kind, generous, trustworthy people make their own tribe of awesomeness. So given that you may want to be more authentic to your own range of who you are, how can you really start to embrace it? Well, I think, as per basically every episode, the first step is finding clarity around why you want to be more authentic. You should have a very clear picture of what your driving force is behind this change, otherwise any change you make at all is just going to be superficial and won't last. Secondly, you might want to consider in which ways you want to be more authentic, and how you want to respond to different situations, and doing this will help you draw out the boundaries and rules of engagement that you will want to follow. For example, when I'm around someone I don't like, I will honestly be less authentic in that I don't straight up tell them, hey, you know what, I don't like you. However, when someone is doing something that is unfair or against my moral code, I will definitely speak up or take action. When it comes to my writing, I make sure that if I find myself thinking about something but might hold it back, I stop and I consider, why do I want to omit this? Would the writing be more or less powerful to include it? What do I have to gain, and what do I have to lose? And by doing this every time, I constantly check myself to see if I can be even more open and transparent. And that said, a helpful framework to consider around transparency in terms of writing and podcasting, speaking, things like that, is the idea of avoiding floodlighting people with your emotions. If you're currently struggling with something, it might make sense to wait until you're more removed to start talking about it on air, as you can get emotionally charged about it, and while it can be incredibly powerful, it could also make people feel really, really awkward. Part of it is how you frame it. If you're telling the story about your mother dying of cancer and how the experience taught you about the shortness of life and gratitude, that's one thing. If you're telling the story about your mother dying and you suddenly break down weeping when you're being interviewed about business, that might be a less effective way to convey your point. But if you're on a podcast and talking about authenticity and being honest with yourself and the benefits of not bottling up your emotions, perhaps that could actually be a really powerful point. However, if you're going to start crying uncontrollably, perhaps you're not going to be in the right mind to make that clear call. Because the more emotionally charged something is, the less likely you'll be able to find the right context and the right level of detail to bring to the situation. So if you feel like you might lose control, it might be strategic to just move away from the topic for now. Another tip on cultivating your unique voice is to just do a lot of whatever it is you want to do. If you want to be more authentic in your writing, write more. If you want to be more authentic in how you show up at work, do more work that gives you a chance to be more authentic. But make sure you're also starting small in low-stakes environments. Being more authentic with a private blog is probably better than starting to be more authentic in the sales report you present to your boss. But this repeated practice is very crucial, because I know that I've been blogging daily for almost a year now, and I think it's been incredibly helpful in developing the range of my own voice. So if you're looking to embrace a larger range of who you are as a human and develop your unique voice, remember to first get clear about why you want to make this change. Figure out your own rules of authentic engagement and start small. So, why do you want to be more authentic? That's it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Inner Monster podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to check out all of our other episodes wherever you get your podcasts, or visit innermonsterpodcast.com. And if you feel so inclined, please spread the word and share this with a friend, or leave a review, or subscribe to get the podcast each week, every Inner Monster Monday. And now, a quick word from our sponsors. If you want to hear Inner Monster podcast episodes before anyone else, consider joining my Patreon at patreon.com/rickkitagawa, where you can get ad-free episodes, discounts on creepy art, and even coaching packages. That's patreon.com/rickkitagawa. I hope to see you there. Thank you so much. And I hope you have a monstrous day.